Hello, everybody. Welcome to the webinar tonight for Homeschool Alliance Book Club session number 3. We are so glad you are here. Jeannie, Stephanie, and me. All you need to do as you're coming in is post your name and where you're coming from in the chat. You will either find it below you or to one side or the other. We would very much love to welcome you. Make sure the little blue bar says to all panelists and attendees, so that we know you're here. Yay! Seattle, Orlando, Atlanta, very good. Welcome, welcome, welcome. While you're doing that, I am going to pull up my notes about what I'm supposed to share at the beginning, because Jeannie has given me good notes. Jeannie and Stephanie, say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
So hello. That's Jeannie is in the blue shirt, Stephanie is in the statement jewelry, and I am Julie Bogart. So good to see you. We've got Pennsylvania, Boston, Virginia. Oh my goodness, how nice. San Diego. If you are new to the Alliance, be sure and put that in your message as well, or post a new message that says it, so that those of us who are old timers can welcome you, because we have both coming in and we are so glad you are here. My goodness, Hong Kong, BC, Canada, San Luis Obispo, where I was just a week ago. Look at that. Shannon's been in the Alliance for a whole month. Welcome, welcome. So glad you're here. I cannot wait for all of you to get to know each other. It is so much fun when you get to know each other. So here's what we're going to go over first. A little bit of shop about the Alliance itself. So the first thing you need to know is that when you come into the Homeschool Alliance, there is a space called Community Coaching. This is where the community supports each other on this homeschool adventure. So Stephanie, Jeannie, me, and our ally coach, Heather, are there to support you. Heather is a member like you, but she's been doing it for so long and has shown such skill in her homeschool, we have asked her now to be one of the coaches. So you will see us responding to you and giving you feedback. But we also encourage the whole community to contribute. So if you're new, my hope is the first thing you do is pop into the community conversation, community coaching space, and introduce yourself. Let us make you feel at home. Secondly, when you come into the Alliance, everything that we have ever done for all 4.5 years exists on replay and previously delivered content. So if you go to the Master Class of Learning, or you go to the One Thing Projects, you will see a library at the bottom of different categories. You can just click on those, and you will be given fully developed lessons around all the topics that you're interested in. We have recently added to the Master Class of Learning a Brave Learner Book Club icon. So all of the lessons, all of the webinars, everything related to my book, The Brave Learner, will be found under that icon. So if you are new today and you missed the first book clubs, you didn't miss them. The replays are there. You can catch right up. I highly recommend it. Those were incredible sessions, by the way. Let's see. What else do I want to mention? Wonderful. Okay. So the main thing that I want you to take away then from today is we are starting on the chapter 4 of The Forces of Enchantment. I am going to have Stephanie and Jeannie now step away. They are going to turn off their video cameras, so it will just be me. There should be video for everybody. Are some people not seeing us? I can tell one person said that, but it might be possible. Oh yes, no video on your end. That's right. Don't worry, you can prance around in your underwear all you want. We are using webinar format this time, not the Zoom room. And the reason for that is we had so many people join us last month, we had to move to a bigger format to house everybody, okay? So you are completely private. We can't hear you. We can't see you. The only thing we can do is read you. And read you, we want to. So please continue to post in there. Absolutely. And Stephanie and Jeannie will be commenting in the chat. Jeannie likes to take what I'm saying and summarize it in the chat. So that will all be available to you as you're reading along. So if you step away, go get a drink for the baby, take a bathroom break, whatever, you can catch up very easily by scrolling through the chat. Okay? Your name will appear based on whatever name you entered with your email address whenever you entered it. I think for webinars, they ask for that. So if you entered like just the last name or you have a certain name associated with your email, that may have auto-populated. But don't worry about it. You can always sign your posts if you want to, you know, dash Julie, if that works for you. All right, so let's dive right into the content. First of all, is everybody reading the book? How many of you have finished the book? If you finished, just put yes in the comment. You love it. Yay. Woohoo. Wonderful. Very, very good. You don't have to be done, by the way. I was just kind of curious. Oh, some of you are on a second read through. Love it. Very good. Very, very good. Thank you to all of you who have posted reviews, by the way. If you have not posted one and you keep thinking, how can I, you know, give back to Julie? Reviews are the way. I don't really have any other needs, but if you want to leave a review, that makes me feel really good. Yes, how many of you have started reading the book with friends in your local community? I'm interested to see. Yep, people are flagging it. They're reading it in their co-ops. I saw someone started a book club. People are starting to send me photos. Look at all these book clubs. Oh my gosh, you guys, I love it. That's so exciting. Oh, and Kelly in Seattle has quite a group going. I've seen that one. Yes, so here's what I want to remind you of in case you somehow missed the news. I think I've broadcast it everywhere. We have this gorgeous companion guide available for the free download. And you can go and get it printed out. We like the Homeschool Printing Company, but go get it printed and you can have your own book clubs. We do use this in the Alliance. And today we are focused, of course, on the four forces of enchantment. And I meant to have it ready to go. How many of you have made art tables? Are you doing that? Have you done your art tables yet? And yes, good, 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 good. Super, super. And Continents of Learning, are you doing those too? They found the glitter today. Oh, Helen. Art carts are great. I love all the people who are doing art carts. Some people are putting curtains to hide this stuff. You guys are very creative about how to keep the space available without crushing your need for an organized, neat home. I'm very impressed. The Lego continent was so helpful. Yes, in fact, if you would post your Continents of Learning in the community coaching, that will be hugely helpful for people who are new to us and are trying to catch up and understand how this all works. By the way, there is a Q&A folder. And if you have a question while I'm speaking, put it there and I'll be sure to answer it at the end. Yes, there are Lego Now, remember, the Continent of Learning is supposed to be a tool to grow your mind. It's not like, okay, well, here's the definitive Continent of Learning for Legos, right? However, seeing other people's sometimes catalyzes you. So don't just take theirs wholesale. Use it as good information so that you can do your own. Okay, good. Excellent, excellent. I love someone saying, got it. Like, you know that I am really trying to make this clear. That's exactly right. Stephanie and Jeannie and I just talked about this yesterday. The Continent of Learning is not a unit study. We are not talking about shoehorning your child's passion into the subject areas. We are seeding your imagination with the ways you can make natural connections to the subject areas. There's a big difference. A unit study says, she likes the planets. Okay, what can we do with planets? Well, we'll make her read a poem about the moon. We'll make her write a narrative about Mars. We'll study the history of astronomy. We will do math calculations about how far away the sun is from the earth. And we're gonna organize it and then require all this activity. And then your child's like, oh my gosh, I hate the solar system. I wish I had never brought it up. The flip side is this. You see that your child is interested in astronomy and you allow yourself to imagine all the ways astronomy shows up in the school subjects. So you find out, for instance, oh yeah, Carry On, Mr. Bowditch is a book about navigation, which involves the stars. Oh yeah, there are books in the library about the constellations. And so next time you're at the library, you kind of pull those off the shelf and you pop them in the library basket and you kind of leave them laying around. Because now your kids might naturally gravitate in that direction. You're not doing the solar system to them. You are creating the connection. So when we talk about Legos, same thing. Maybe next time you're working on skip counting, you actually just dump a Lego bucket on the table and you start using the Legos to demonstrate skip counting. You don't say, okay, let's use Legos to teach math. You just naturally draw it in. You start to create these connections inside of yourself and allow them to come out as you relate to your child. Does this make sense? You guys getting it? Okay, great. Okay, great, great. Yes, yes, yes. Very good. Okay, so as you saw, we have these superpowers of learning. This is inside the digital download guide. They made all these adorable icons. What you can do with this page is if you have a scatterbook, and of course there is a scatterbook template in here in case you yourself want to print the one that's inside here. But even if you have like what I have my own scatterish book. This is my scatterbook. You could literally print out the icons multiple times, print this page multiple times, and when you're planning from behind, you can just cut out the icon and glue it right next to what took place that matched that icon. Or you could have a page that's dedicated in your scatterbook to the icon. So today we're talking about surprise, mystery, risk, and adventure. So I recommended that when you're working through the superpowers, maybe dedicate a section of your scatterbook to each of the superpowers, like 2-3 pages per scatterbook. If you're doing it on loose leaf paper, then it can be as many as you want and just stick them in your notebook. But you could put that icon at the top or on your divider as a way to give you that visual clue. And then you can start taking notes, brainstorming ideas, even putting the ideas I recommend today inside those superpowers. Yes, you could put the superpowers on sticker sheets. What a fabulous idea. In fact, my designer, if I told them that that's what you were doing, I think she might have a coronary. She'd be so excited. The Homeschool Printing Company is amazing. This printed in 4-color and bound is only $16, and I hear they send them very quickly. So that's awesome. The icons are on page 11. And then over here, they give us a little calendar. Now, we're in March, and we're doing all 4 superpowers at once. But if you wanted to just do 1 per month, like I recommended in the book, here's a little schedule for you. Guess what? You don't have to go in order. Mind blown. Maybe you find yourself focused on the body, and that's like way in the third group of the superpowers. Well, guess what? The body can go in March or April, and then you could skip back to mystery, and then you could go over to curiosity. They don't have to go in order. So, and you don't even have to plan them. You could go sort of one at a time as it comes on you. I know it seems silly that I have to say this, but some of you are type A and you're also literalists. So one of my chief missions in life is to explode your boxes, or at least give you new ways to use your boxes. So here are all your boxes, because you type A people love boxes. But now I'm telling you with a very serious face, you don't have to go in order. Does that sound type A enough that that's like an instruction you could write? I don't have to go in order. In fact, that's one of the rules. Does that help? Okay, good. So, superpower from behind, Stephanie. That's perfect. Exactly. Always cater to your personality. Just give yourself permission to imagine that personality under new conditions. So you can be type A, just change the list, give yourself freedom to be flexible within your need to record and to know what's coming. Those, we want to honor all those things, but we want to honor them from the space of it working for you, not being under this pressure to live up to some imagined ideal. That's the difference. How can we work with this type A-ness so it works for you? It doesn't exist as some kind of a judgment on you. That's type A people a lot of times live under their own preconceived judgment. They set up a system that they're not going to live up to, and then they satisfyingly beat themselves up for failing to live up to it, right? So my job is to say, look, you love systems, you love lists. Let's find a way to work with it so that you still like yourself at the end, so that you're actually making the progress you crave. Does that make sense? Awesome. Yes, raise your hand. You know what I'm talking about. And conversely, the type B person who feels really comfortable, you know, sort of exploding the code, guess how they feel at the end? Oh, crud, I can't count any of this. It doesn't fit on a lesson planner. I can't prove to anyone I planned in advance. So what do I tell you? I tell you, to use the methods of a type A person after the fact. So you get the satisfying credit and progress without violating your need for inspiration and box exploding. Do you see how I'm working here? We're coming at you from two sides. We're kind of bringing the two together to create like a type C. Would you say public school system is a type A program? Depending on the teacher, I would say on the whole, yes, because they're box checkers. They are get through, get done, complete, test, evaluate. So yes, but you will have type B teachers in the type A system and they're trying to find their way around. And I've shared some of those stories in this book, you've read them, like the one about the archaeology, you know, where we were digging up the Aztec pots that we had made, right? Like that's a person who knows we have to study Aztecs, but thinking about it in a way that engages the learner. Yep. Okay. Yes, there are even homeschool charters that are like that. I will tell you, I was in California last week and I met with a lot of charter schools and I was sort of staggered by how schooly it felt. I mean, it's less schooly than traditional school, but I'm so used to being in this Brave Writer-y space that I was like, whoa, that's a little more schooly than I'm used to. So figuring it out, how you interact with a system and still retain the freedom to learn, that's a challenge for all of us. Yep, it is hard to navigate. Ah, this is great. I shouldn't be reading. I should just keep talking. All right, so we've got the superpowers. You can put them on stickers or cut them out, glue them. We've got our list, you know, the 12 months of the year, and you can put the superpowers however you want, whatever order works for you. And then we talk in this chapter about the one thing principle, and I think this is really important to just go over before we dive into the superpowers. The one thing principle is a sanity saver. It's a sanity saver. If you read my book and you think to yourself, I've got to get all 12 superpowers spinning by next week, you will hate my book. You will think of it as a death sentence. That is not my goal. My goal is to give you lots of options, and then you take your time exploring them one at a time. So the one thing principle is basically this. Prepare. Pick something. So you're looking at the superpowers, and as you were reading, one of the ideas popped out at you. For instance, let's say you were reading The Four Forces of Enchantment, and you were reading through surprise, and you're like, yeah, that's okay. I do a little surprising stuff. You get to mystery, and suddenly you're reading about a jeweler's loop, a kaleidoscope, a microscope, a telescope, 3D glasses, and you think, oh my gosh, that's something I've never considered. It would be so much fun to introduce multiple ways of seeing to my children. And then you keep reading risk, adventure, and you keep going, but your mind is still back on buying a jeweler's loop or getting some binoculars to go bird watching. That's how you know it kind of grabbed you by the heel. It's like, wait a minute, that's something I kind of want to try. Now you put it on the one thing, you just write it right here in the big box. I can't do this backwards. Oh, look at me go. Anyway, you write it on the big box, okay? You can stick it on the refrigerator, tape it to your window, put it on the back of your book. You're gonna write down that one thing, mystery, let's say. And maybe even under it, you say, exploring different tools to change how we see. So you kind of give yourself this overarching vision. Well, how do we execute it? Well, the first thing we do, let's see if I can get my finger in the right place. We prepare. We prepare. Do you own a jeweler's loop? Do you even know what a jeweler's loop is? Do you have a decent pair of binoculars? Do you need three sets because you have three kids and having one will just create sibling rivalry? Do you have no money and can't afford three pairs of binoculars? I mean, that's what preparation is. It's literally asking yourself, okay, I want to do this thing, Do I have what it takes to do this thing? And if I don't, how can I get it? Is a birthday coming up and we can get binoculars for birthday? Do we only need one pair, but what we need is three different things you can use to look through, you know, a telescope and a camera and binoculars, and then everyone takes turns. So preparation is just taking that extra moment of time to imagine the execution. What we do so often is we say, okay, I want to do this, and then we try to do it tomorrow. And then we aren't confident yet. We don't quite know what we're doing. We just know we want to, and we kind of just jump in with both feet, and we expect all our kids to sort of cooperate with each other, and then we wonder why the whole thing falls apart. Because, well, we didn't anticipate. We didn't know what was coming. And we're sort of afraid to prepare because it feels like it's taking time away from, like, execution. And we're all about executing. We just want to execute all day long. We just want to be doing real things. Preparation for me is like cleaning house. I always feel like I've wasted a ton of time when I'm cleaning. And that's how preparation can feel. It can feel like you're wasting time. Let's see. Somebody says, is this implemented for the kids or is this for us to grow? What if they reject it, like the unit study? So let me stay with this. Hold that thought for a moment. So let's say you've read and you're like, I'd like to stir up the special property of mystery in my family. I was interested in all of these sort of different ways of seeing. So I'm going to prepare. I'm going to think about what would be fun to introduce to the family. So maybe you decide you're going to introduce binoculars and some bird watching and just starting to get into the mystery of what birding is. Well, now you can think about, well, how do I introduce this? Do I foist it on them like a unit study, saying, today we're learning about birds. We're going to learn the proper usage of binoculars. We will do it for X number of minutes. Then we will report our findings in this worksheet at the kitchen table. Is that what we're going to do? Or could we present it in a way that allows a child's natural curiosity to be provoked? So maybe now you borrow from the surprise property. And one night after your kids are in bed, you put out binoculars, you lay them on a table near an open window, you get out a birding field guide and you kind of just leave it and let them discover it. And then maybe you go one step further, you actually bundle everybody up in coats and backpacks, and you go somewhere where they can actually use the binoculars and look at the trees and the leaves and, oh, there's a bird, and then, oh, there's a snail. And you just start exploring it. But that's the execute part. Preparation is the thoughts in advance, the procuring of the items, the picking of the method, the setting of the date. And then on that day, you execute, you put it out. You share it with your families. You allow that day to be about that thing, about that experiment. Now, here's what you have to know. All of this is experimental. When I introduced bird watching to my kids, I started by watching them myself, not by asking them to watch birds. I was looking through the field guide. I had the binoculars for me. When a parent is standing at a window holding binoculars, guess what happens to five children? They all want a turn, right? Isn't that totally different than saying, use these binoculars to try and find the cardinal in the backyard? They may still want to do that because you may have kids who have not been damaged by having education done to them. But the ones who are suspicious of you, who know you're trying to trick them into learning, they're going to be resistant. So where you start is you get the binoculars, you look out the window, like there's my window right there. You're looking through the bird book, you're mumbling to yourself, oh my gosh, I wonder if that's a black-capped chickadee or a Carolina chickadee. And the next thing you know, you'll have a partner in crime. One of your kids will be like, well, let me see. Oh, I think it's the black-capped. Why do you think so? Oh, I think it's the Carolina. Why do you think so? A raging debate will ensue. You've now introduced mystery. That is the execution part. While you are living that moment, promise me you will not take a phone call or text. You won't answer the door. You will simply be in the moment. You will enjoy it. When I say enjoy, all I mean, it doesn't mean you have to be having great fun. All I mean is you are living in the present. You are actually here now. holding the binoculars, facilitating the look, discussing with your children. You're not thinking ahead to the math lesson that comes after lunch. Understand? You are invested in this moment. And then it's over and you move on. Maybe you do other activities that day. Maybe that's the only activity because it took that much energy for you to create a moment that you were excited about. And guess what? Totally okay. You have my permission on execution day. That word is starting to sound funny in my ears. On execution day, on enjoyment day, you have my permission to only do one thing. That's why we call this the one thing principle. When you do one thing well, you create a memory. You create momentum. And here's how you create the momentum. A week later, a whole week later, over breakfast or lunch, I want you to do the crystallizing part of the one thing practice. You know what it is? Reminisce. Reminisce. You'll be eating lunch, you know, eating your ramen, your quesadilla, and you're going to say to your kids, gosh, I really love using binoculars. They're so cool. Like that. Just one statement. Somebody else might say, yeah, me too. And then you say, you know, I don't know if I still know the difference between a black cat chickadee and a Carolina chickadee. Do you? They're like, no. It must take a long time to learn the difference. I wonder if there are experts who know. Like that. It's like part of your life. It's natural. It's something you look back on fondly. We are so busy rushing to the next thing, barely giving ourselves credit for something we did well and never going back to it. It's like, oh, I read that in the fall. Why would I talk about the book I read in November in May? To remind your children that they're having an amazing life. That's why. I mean, you do it with their birthdays, don't you? Remember when you were 2 and you took the cake and smashed it in your face? Oh my gosh, that was so cute. Remember when we went on the vacation to Lake Michigan and everybody swam and the water was so cold? We do it for fun things. We forget to do it with the meaningful things. And yet, if you do that, if you reminisce about those experiences that you were intentionally creating, you build momentum in your homeschool. Your kids start to trust you and believe good things are ahead. Because my mom created this one good thing and it was so good, she's still talking about it. You hear what I'm saying? That's what you're signaling. I'm not saying they're having that as a conscious thought. That is what their experience of your home life is. And as I've experienced with my kids, so I'll share this with you as the other end, right? Because I've got 5 adult kids now. If you do something well once, they think you did it all the time. And if you do something well 2, 3, 4 times, they definitely think you did it all the time. And the things you did all the time, they're doing them with their kids or their friends or their adult friends. Because now that is the culture they come from. That is their belief system. Yesterday, I was watching the NBC News, and the final story is always really sweet. And it was this Nigerian 8-year-old kid who is an expert chess player. His parents were homeless immigrants, and they just fundraised over $100,000 in a GoFundMe account so that they could move into an apartment. And this kid is beating adults. He's like a phenom. And I turned to my son, Liam, who's living with me right now, and I said, hey, did you hear there's this 8-year-old, he goes, chess player from Nigeria? And he starts talking about it, and he knew all the details. Because he's actually watched him play on YouTube. Chess for Liam is a meaningful, happy, satisfying family memory that he has carried into adulthood that continues to be a part of his life. It wasn't done to him. It wasn't a requirement that we told him he needed in order to be smart. Do you hear what I'm saying? Checking your... Somebody said a relaxed mindset is challenging to maintain daily. Oh, you, please, show up as yourselves. I don't want you to be relaxed. Be the uptight, anxious human being you are if you need to be. My goodness, what a sentence to inflict on a person who's a little neurotic. No, it's not about being relaxed. It's about being yourself. and giving yourself permission to have the homeschool you've been wanting. The way you get there is one thing at a time. You prepare, you execute, you enjoy, and then you reminisce. And you can do that from a place of neuroses if you need to, or from a, you know, I'm a yoga girl, Birkenstock person. You can do it either way. The difference isn't so much about your posture as it is about your wholeheartedness. You know, are you trying? Can you admit when it flubbed up? You can even say to your kids, oh my goodness, looks like I'm trying to do school to you again. Let's just scrap that idea. I tried. I put out artichokes. I created laurel wreaths. I thought this would help us celebrate Rome. You hate it. Okay, I get it. Can we just be honest? Can we just admit our flops in the middle? It's not like you're being tested. You're just living together. You can have big successes. You can have big flops. And they're all allowed. It's not like you're performing. These are your children. These are your kids. You can just be. You can just say, oh my God, I'm so uptight today. I have this idea I want to share with you. I'm afraid you're going to hate it. I don't know if you're going to like it. I want to model this really good project, but I'm afraid you're going to think I am being neurotic. Like, occasionally you can confess that to your kids and they will rescue you. They will throw out the net and they'll catch you just like this. Right? Because you're in it together. You're on a learning journey together. You can invite their opinions. I want to try this with you. Tell me the truth of how it feels so I can know better how to serve you, how to give you a life that makes you happy. Like that. Or they will confirm your fears and make new plans. How about that? Wouldn't it be great if you set something up and they're like, here's a better way to do it, Mom. Here's the way that would really make me connect to this lesson. That would be interesting too. Yes. Okay, so let's get to the superpowers. Okay. So the first thing that I ask you to do always in each of the superpowers is to see differently. To see differently. Too often we go straight into execution mode. We're like, okay, I think I get what this is, so we're just going to start doing it. But maybe you haven't fully had the paradigm shift inside of yourself to see the value or to see how it shows up in your family. So I've had people writing to me already, you know, lots of Instagram messages, Facebook messages from people, emails, saying things like, I tried this and it didn't work. Or I don't really understand how to use surprise. Like, they just don't know. They're like, I already give them gifts on their birthday. Do I really have to go out and buy a lot of new stuff and hide it on a coffee table overnight? I don't really have the budget for that. They get stuck in the literal examples that I've given. They get stuck in this idea that there's a right way to do surprise instead of shifting how they see their homeschools through the lens. Ooh, I like that, of surprise. Do you hear what I say? Let me say that again. They're more interested in, like I said, we want to execute all day. They just want to do. So they read, they kind of read quickly through the seeing differently part, and they go straight to all the strategies. And then the strategy feels like it didn't work. And so then they're like, why didn't it work? And what I'm saying is, you got to see differently first. What is the value of surprise? Why is surprise something of value? So I want to ask you that. Let's find out if anyone sees differently. What is the value of surprise in a child's life and in the world of learning? How is surprise a valuable asset in learning? It engages them. Let's see. Keep writing. Let's see how quickly you guys can find things to put in. Ignites curiosity. Shows that you are thinking of them and considering who they are. Helps them change the way they see. Communicates care. Memorable. They feel love. Changes the sour mood. Novelty. Memorable. It excites. Sparks a new brain pattern. Makes their views important. Oh my gosh, you guys are doing great. Surprise opens a window on something the kids don't know about. Connection. The unexpected. Gives enchantment. Okay. Scroll through now again. And think about surprise in that context. So now, getting away from the book, What are surprising things about your relationship with your kids in your homeschool that have been sources of igniting curiosity or connection or making something feel new? Can you think of anything like that? Yes, surprise definitely makes things feel new. It also makes people feel cared about because you were thinking about them when you weren't with them and you did something meant to bring delight. Surprise is about delight, isn't it? We don't want to scare people. We're trying to startle them into delight. Strewing has been her savior. Makes them feel, dropping everything for donuts and coffee and read alouds. Love that. Ash is a master strewer, said Heather. That's awesome. We need that Instagram account. Looking your kids in the eyes. Yes. Isn't it crazy that that's surprising? But you know, they're short. We look over their heads all the time. We're so busy directing them like an airplane on a runway that we forget to just like get down to eye level and really look. That's awesome. That's a perfect one. Canceling plans when the cousins plan a last minute trip. Putting a book out. And making a little bed of pillows. Oh, this is great, you guys. Partnership, a random weekly platter of cinnamon rolls and bacon. New art items. Exactly, big juicy conversations about a topic you think is boring. See how good you guys are at this? You are so good at this. Oh, I love this so much. So here are some thoughts I had to add to this amazing array. I wanted them all in the chat so that we have the chat later because it's all so good, so good. So first of all, surprise can be practical. Items on a table, experiences, books, food. You know, you guys are hitting all of those, right? Dropped everything and went to the zoo today. Exactly. Allowing dessert before lunch, right? Surprising them with a yes when they expect to hear a no. Exactly. I would put that in the category of an emotional surprise. The eye contact, the rubbing shoulders right before they start a writing project, allowing a little independence that they weren't expecting, you know? Letting them be the big girl, the big boy, the teenager who can drive to Starbucks to do their math lesson. That's surprising. Sending someone on an errand upstairs to go find what you can't find. Surprise is sometimes the feeling of somebody investing more in you than you knew you had. The belief they can solve their own problem. They come to you whining, complaining, needing help, and you say, you know what? I would love to help you, but you're actually really good at this. So can you just take a stab at it first? Because I don't know, I believe in you. I think I'm pretty sure you got this. I don't want to undermine that. Another, cheering, literally celebrating with them. We'll get to that in the celebration piece, but it is a part of a surprising experience. One of the things we used to do when our family played spoons around this table behind me, you know, you're grabbing the spoon right at the last second, and then there's always somebody who doesn't have a spoon at the end. And what we used to do, I don't even know how it got started, but the kids who all had spoons would climb up on their chairs and then smack the ceiling. Every single time if they got a spoon. So it became this big race, of course, and there were times when they hit each other with the spoons and we had to solve those problems. But it's this, the surprise is doing something with their bodies, emotional expression, that would not be appropriate in any other context. So smacking the ceiling with a spoon is a surprising outcome for that game. Make sense? Yeah. Sharing positively about your child within earshot to a third party. Surprising. I cannot tell you how many parents in front of their children at homeschool conventions have approached me and just dressed down their poor child with the most loving intentions. You know, John is 15, he's dyslexic, he's never liked writing, he finds it such a struggle, I'm at my wit's end, we've tried so hard, he hates everything, right in front of him. Right in front of him. It would be so different if a parent came up to me with a 15-year-old dyslexic who said something like this. This is my son. He's brilliant. He has a passion for these various things, and he is finding it frustrating to express that in writing. All I want to do is help capture that brilliance. Do you have ideas for me? That would be surprising for that child. That would be a completely different experience, and yet driving for the same outcome. Can you reframe your worry in such a way that you support the innate ability, resilience, capacity of your child? That would be a surprise use of your powers as the adult in your child's life. And then finally, environmental surprise. Adding brownies is our tagline, you know, almost like when all else fails, add brownies. But, you know, dropping off one of your 12-year-olds somewhere. Maybe you go shopping at Kroger and there's a Starbucks and they bring their work to Kroger's and you leave them alone and you get them a Frappuccino and you go shopping. A little bit of independence, a little change of scene, like that. And then finally, I think cool tools and good lighting go a long, long way in homeschool. So when something starts to get stale, whipping out something they didn't expect. When we did copy work, of course, I've shared about gel pens and black paper ad nauseum, but we also used, like, I'd print out those illuminated letters, those manuscript pages where they could do their own illuminated letter and then write the passage, or use of stickers and artwork for the kids who like that kind of thing. So reimagining what they need to do through the lens of surprise. Cool tools, good lighting. They go a long way. Oh, notes left for them in surprising places is fabulous. Oh my gosh, I'm a big fan of that. So let's move on to mystery. Mystery. And if you have questions about surprise, stick them in the Q&A folder. I'm going to address all of this at the end. We will go till about 8:15 Eastern, okay? Mystery. Let's think about it in the practical way. Page 47 in the book, of course, has our lovely list of all those mystery tools. The reason that I loved writing this list of tools, it's on this page, 47, is that we are preparing our children for academic life, for adult life, which requires, as the primary skill of adult existence, I'm just going to throw that out there. It might not be, but in my view right now it is, the capacity to see through multiple perspectives. Insight generation comes from the capacity to intersect with a wide variety of viewpoints. It doesn't come from staying in one lane. It comes from drawing from a variety of sources. And the quickest way for kids to understand this notion of viewpoint is to literally change the way reality is experienced through their eyes. You know, the first time somebody tells you that there are microscopic bacteria that you can't see existing in the air around you, that is a mind-blowing truth. We kind of grow up with it, so we've accepted it. But then when you put, like, your saliva or you put air or a hair in a microscope, aren't you a little blown away that all this stuff is going on? You look at blood and all this stuff is going on, but you can't see it with the naked eye. Isn't that mind-blowing? Perception follows the flow of information, the new information that we are receiving that we did not have before. It shifts our perspective. It helps us deal with complexity. So one of the reasons I'm all about shifting these perspectives is that it creates mystery. It leads us into the unknown. And all good academics are about exploring the edge of knowing. It's not just reiterating what everyone before us has done. It's learning sort of the tools and skills and information that exists today and building on it. That's our responsibility to the next generation, to build on it, to make a contribution. So those perceptual tools are this very concrete way of inviting that experience. It can be referenced in college and in high school. They're writing a paper and you can say, well, this is sort of like, you know, the telephoto lens. This is a little bit like putting this subject under the microscope. This is a little bit like taking binoculars and looking at the long range. Does this make sense? I hope this is helpful. Yes, it does create analogies, and it also gives concrete experience to back it up. You know, a bird through the lens is very different than the one you just see on the tree. And it's why photography and film is so powerful. It allows us to come from angles and perspectives we're not used to, which reimagines our expectations. Got it? So those are the practical ways of thinking about how to deepen mystery. The goal of mystery is to look for clues to a bigger truth. So when we're doing math, what is the larger sort of world that math lives in? Is it just worksheet pages to get through? Is it just math facts to master so you can do calculus someday? Or does math live in a bigger container? Is there more to math than solving the problem someone chose for you? So one of the ways to think about mystery is scavenger hunt, treasure hunt. I mean, you can literally do those. Those are great. But we can also think about all the subjects through that lens. So one of the examples I gave in the book was how, I think it was my third or second grade teacher, taught us about how the numbering system was evolved. And initially when, you know, agricultural people were herding sheep, they didn't have a counting system. So they grabbed a stick to represent each sheep. And they would keep this bundled together. But if you had more than 20 or 30 sheep, it's very hard to keep that one-to-one. So they started organizing them in groups of five. And she very cleverly put the sticks on the table and then the one that crosses it and showed us 4, 5. I mean, I remember it to this day because as a non-math person, that story made numbers make sense to me for the very first time, that they were a, you know, script representation of all these sticks that they use to organize to count something real like sheep. So we need to ask ourselves these questions when we're talking about math. What is the edge of unknowing? What's the story? What's the mystery embedded in it? Can we go on a scavenger hunt for more clues to the bigger truth? That's what we're looking for. Pi Day was fun, and I loved that Jeannie gave us so many ways to celebrate Pi. And that is an exact example of what I'm talking about. Such a good, perfect example. Logic puzzles, magic tricks where we're dealing with illusion, very powerful. That what you see is not really what's going on. Holy smokes. I mean, that's necessary to understand history, politics, sociology, statistics. How many illusions do we create? I brought a book with me, in fact, to share with you. Do you guys know Betty Edwards, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain? How many of you know this book? It is phenomenal. I did not know that I could be taught to draw. I grew up thinking I wasn't artistic. And then along came Betty Edwards. This is before I had children, before I homeschooled. And somebody told me, did you know you could learn to draw realistically? I was like, seriously? Is that a thing? So I bought this book. And I sat down with a pencil, and I have drawn very beautifully ever since. Because, first of all, she educated me on how the brain works, and then she coached me by describing the experience of when my brain moves from a very logic base to a very perceiving base. The difference between being a judger and a perceiver, both necessary for all kinds of ways in our lives, but they're not the same. And so that shift being described meaningfully to me, and then being given an exercise, I'm looking for the exercise, I suddenly could draw. So let me just show you the example in the book. She has us draw this picture while it's upside down. You know why? Because if you draw it right side up, your brain is screaming at you things like you are drawing an eye. And suddenly, the logic of what eye is to you overtakes what you're actually looking at. But when it's upside down, you're doing this. I am drawing a curve. And it's sort of related to this other curve in this spatial relationship. And your brain actually shifts perception. And suddenly, you're drawing what you see, not what you think you see. This is what mystery is. It is the willingness to let go of what we know in favor of what we might discover. It's the willingness to let go of what we know in favor of what we might discover. And so when I took this little program for myself, I'm not saying you should be doing this with your kids, I'm saying this is what I did for me, it changed gazillions of things in the way I taught, in the way I thought about learning, in the way I organized the Brave Writer program years later. And if you are looking then for what I'm talking about in mystery, that's an interesting place to start with learning to draw. It might be an interesting place to start with your kids. Something to think about. It's a fabulous book. Do it right in front of your children, by the way. Do not hide this in a closet somewhere. Live the things you're learning directly in front of your kids, right in the middle of the day, taking up really important time. Then we can also talk in mystery about secret codes, like the Morse code, World War II, the Navajo Indians, code breakers. We can use partnership writing. The very, very first activity in my product, partnership writing, is about secret codes, using lemon juice and invisible ink. Why? I don't know. There is something about shrouding language in secrecy that yields a different level of interest in writing, different level of interest in language. It's why learning a foreign language is exciting. It's like you're speaking in code. I remember that my kid's dad used to always say that when he first took Spanish and they said that table, the word table in Spanish was tabla, he said he literally in his brain thought, that's so funny that they don't know the real word. Like literally that was his first thought. Because when we are so embedded in our own belief structure, our own habits of experience, everything else is a little bit suspect. We're not comfortable. Part of what we're trying to do then, when we are guiding our children in their educations, we're surprising them into curiosity, into delight, into investigation and exploring. And then we are deepening the mystery of the subject so that they don't develop such fixed views that they stop learning. The danger of so much traditional education is that they aren't actually focused on deepening for the sake of learning. They're interested in mastering information, in codifying, getting through skills, not through actually experiencing the heart of academics, which is, oh, there's more to know. I thought I knew, actually I don't. I share in the book later when we're talking about history that literally there is no fixed view of anything that's ever happened in history. Our understanding evolves every day, and we change our interpretations and the meaning we generate from events every day. Let's train our kids for that experience, shall we? So they don't sit there resisting everything that goes on around them. They can be a part of that exciting adventure, and they can treat it as exciting, not as destabilizing, not as undermining their well-being. Make sense? Yes, growth mindset. Exactly. You got it. The last two parts then for mystery are invisibility, like I talked about before, being able to discover that not everything that you know is visible to you. It's always worth asking the question. I love this question. I remember it being asked in grad school. What is not being said here? What is not being represented here? What is not understood here? We're so busy focused on what exists. What is not being recognized and acknowledged? So if we're doing 2 + 2 = 4 and we see those symbols, we could look at that and actually ask the question, when I look at 2 + 2 = 4, what am I seeing? Am I seeing 2 + 2 = 4? The truth is you're not. You are seeing symbols of two items and then a symbol of putting it with some other items, and then a symbol for two more items, and then another symbol. Like, that's really what's going on here. So being patient enough to get curious about what we're actually doing and seeing is part of deepening the academic experience. Make sense? All right. And then finally, I had biological mysteries. Kids are endlessly curious about their bodies, and by the time we're adults, we've been trained to ignore our bodies. So I say, let's be interested. They got a grumbly tummy, their shoulders hurt, they hate sitting in this hard chair. Instead of telling our kids all the time, quit complaining, pay attention. Oh, it hurts. What would help you focus right now? What would help you pay attention right now? Take advantage of that curiosity and that mystery of their bodies and support them in knowing themselves. All right, risk. All questions about mystery, stick them in the Q&A. I'm going to try and get this done. We're kind of on a time crunch here. Okay, because I get talking and then I want to say more things. All right, here we go. Risk. Obviously, risk always implies the physical. Climbing on top of the table to go get the glass of milk, like I mentioned in my book. But there is the pleasure of using adult tools, whether it's a mixer or a blender or a power saw or a sewing machine. Hello. Make it safe, but let them use them. This is one of the fastest ways to spur a child's willingness to grow, is using adult tools. Do it safely, do it with supervision, but please enjoy that with your kids. Things like ATVs and going to theme parks, that's all very thrilling for children and, of course, a necessary part of their growth. Sports, indoor rock climbing, doing something by themselves. Of course, attend to their safety, but also, of course, make it possible for them to use their bodies in a risky way. The second piece, then, is emotional risk. Meeting new people. Self-management at a party without your supervision. You know, your child gets dropped off at a birthday party, you don't hover the whole time. Or your child actually spends the afternoon at a friend's house and you don't always have to have it be a family experience. Giving your child the opportunity for self-management is risky. They might embarrass you. They might do something stupid. The parent might mistreat your child. I remember being in second grade at one of my friend's houses, and while I'm sitting in the room with my friend, the mother comes in, pulls me out, sits me at a table across from her, and accuses me of having been mean to her daughter at school, which, to be honest, I think she had the wrong kid. It wasn't me. But I'm telling you, that was a scarring experience. I mean, I went home crying, and I had to tell my mother, and my mom and I had a big conversation about it, but that was important. That is a risk. I'm at this house. This mother mistreats me. My mom has the opportunity now to walk me through how to handle mistreatment by an adult. That's okay. Not everything in your child's life, when they take a risk, comes out with a happy ending. That's the nature of risk. It's an opportunity to grow, to develop new skills. So important. Standing up to a bully, or self-protecting away from a bully. Standing up to bullies isn't always a good idea. Sometimes it's good to teach our kids how to withdraw, how to set a boundary, how to walk away. Learning that resiliency that you need after you take a risk, like the example I just shared. Creating space to risk the truth. A child can say to you, I hate this math program. I don't like that you won't let me fill in the blank. That is also a risk, and kids need the freedom to do it poorly. I hate this program! As opposed to, Mom, I'm really finding this program difficult. It's so demanding for me. You know, what 8-year-old's ever gonna say that? They're gonna say, I hate this program. And then you're gonna swoop in and say, wow, you told me the truth right there. Okay, let's talk about it. What do you hate? We're not going to judge them and shame them for risking telling their emotional truth. We're going to support them in learning how to do it, right? And then, of course, academic risk. Thinking thoughts that don't align necessarily with your family culture, or doing violence to the subject before you learn to do it right. That's one of my favorite things to do with writing. So, for instance, I'll give you a great example. When I was teaching commas to my kids, we tried writing a sentence and putting a comma after every single word, which of course is wrong, but I was trying to illustrate what the comma actually does. So what I did is I read the sentence obeying every comma. So it would be something like, let me just read a sentence so there's a comma after every word. Visit an art museum and compare prints postcards to original paintings, like that. Well, obviously, that is not what we want to read when we're reading, but that's what commas after every word would do to that sentence. So we do violence to the correct approach to reveal the power of that punctuation mark. You could do the same thing with math. You could work all the problems and get the wrong answers. You can try applying the meaning of multiplication to subtraction and watch it not work. You can retell history in a way that it didn't happen, or you can try and tell it from a different perspective than the one that is your race or your culture's version and see it open up new ideas about history. I remember being in a class that was focused especially on the experience of the African-American experience of religious faith. And the teacher started out by saying this. He said, "The Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria brought the pilgrims to America." And then he said this, "Who wasn't on those boats?" He's like, "What about these other boats? The Amistad." And he listed a whole bunch of slavers. He's like, "When I was sitting in my class and they told the story of America, I wasn't represented." Wow. That changed my thinking in an instant. It was a completely new, risky way to think about our history. That's what I'm talking about. Giving yourself permission to look differently at what you are so used to seeing. That's risk. All right, let's move on to adventure, and then we're going to do questions. Adventure is not only just about leaving the house, although that is what I am calling it in the book. I want you to think of it like travel and theme park visits. There's a preparation to adventure, right? It's joining a club. It's being in a sports team. It's being an actress or a ballerina. Having an adventure means there is some level of journey attached to it. It's not just getting out of the house. So when I think about it, I think about these properties, looking forward to something. It includes some unknowns, things I can't predict or manage in advance, but that I have to be prepared to face. It may be and is likely something you plan. It's usually less spontaneous, although we have spontaneous adventures, but in most cases, there's a certain planning aspect to it. It often tests your self-reliance or self-sufficiency. There's often even a sort of comparison going on between you and fellow teammates or fellow classmates. Adventure involves some risk, but it also involves sort of a narrative arc. You can kind of see where it's going and where it's going to end. And it has a journey quality to it. An academic adventure might look like taking some classes at the local school or junior college, joining a co-op, having a tutor, picking a program that's different than everyone else in the family is using. That's what I'm talking about. And of course, by the time they're teenagers, we want to include things like internships, jobs, skill training, 4-H, acting in a company, something that puts them out into the world that makes use of a skill or a talent or an interest. You know, chess competitions, whatever it is. So as you are looking then in your, you know, little printout guide here, don't feel like you have to do all four of these in the next month, but give yourself permission to maybe make notes of where some of those things are already showing up and give yourself permission to kind of prepare, execute, enjoy, and reminisce about one of them. Pick one of them just for the whole month. Just pick one, do it on one day, kind of take a risk, go on a little adventure, instill a little surprise or mystery, and just see what happens. Treat it like an experiment. Don't worry if it flops. All of this takes time and practice. And your job isn't to do it right. Just do it. Just explore it. See the limits of what I share. Bring new to what I share. Come back and tell us what worked that was different and better than the things I shared. Okay, good. So I'm going to move to the Q&A really quick. I can't wait to see what Elena said. All right, now I want to read Elena. What did she say? Everybody's telling her how great she is. Oh, her daughter is doing a backpacking trip, hiking several miles into her campsite out of the area with friends, but without her family. Wow, that is awesome. That's fabulous. All right, Wendy, I'm a little torn because I've been planning a bit and I love all the Brave Rider lifestyle elements, but doing them regularly is not popular here. Doing anything regularly isn't. I usually let it go in favor of supporting passion projects. We've become very unschooly. Maybe too much though? I don't know. Maybe not. Because as much as I like arrows and all the lifestyle routines, we don't really ever do them now. Where's the balance? How do you sometimes make sure things are being done once in a while, or don't you, if the kids aren't really into it? Well, a couple of things are going on here. You're in spring. Do you remember my, in the book, seasonal schooling? The spring is unschooly. No matter how schooly you are, everybody's sick of the routine. So you are going to follow passions and interests more naturally between March and June than between August and November. So if you have some of that stuff that you want your kids to be exposed to, or you want to use an arrow, one of the ways to do it is this: save it for the fall. Another way to do it is internalize the ideas. Don't hold the arrow in front of your kids and say, we're reading the arrow. Just read it. Internalize. Think about semicolons. Think about those literary craft pieces and comment on them in a natural way when you are engaged in their interests. All of homeschooling is really about seeding your own imagination and resources so that you can start to have a meaningful connection around those ideas, the things your kids don't know. Does that make sense? They don't know that they could be interested in grammar. So doing grammar to them doesn't work. But if you start to know these things naturally, then maybe you will someday read a comma sentence to them. Maybe you will, while you're reading a passage, notice the semicolon and comment on it. Maybe you will read something as an opening hook, and you get to the end of the book and you notice the return, the hook and return, and you actually flip back to the beginning and say, whoa, you guys, read this opening for me. And they read it and you say, notice anything about the opening and the ending? But see, some of you don't even know to look for that stuff. That's why we wrote the arrow. I'm trying to seed your imagination. I'm trying to help you know those pieces that you can bring to the table for your kids in relationship, not doing education to them, but bringing it to their awareness. Does that make more sense? Awesome. Thank you, Wendy. All right. Pi Day was a flop here. I bought Pi Ingredients Research Fund videos, prepped for several of the suggestions in the one thing. No one wanted to engage at all. I ended up baking a pie myself and doing one of the activities, hoping someone would take interest. Nope. I know it wasn't supposed to be for me, but it really hurt my feelings to put in that effort. How do you handle when you prepare ahead for something no one wants to engage? Oh, it's crushing. I usually have to call a girlfriend and really bitch a little bit about my own children, because that is the most frustrating thing of all. So here's one of the things I've noticed when I've interacted with a lot of parents is this. There is a feeling with some kids that they are suspicious of your best efforts. And one of the reasons is there is a habit in the family of the mother being the leader and the kids having to follow along and then affirm the mother's efforts. Flip the script, go sit with your kids. Have them teach you how to play a game, sit with them while they're crafting, go get out your knitting while they're knitting, pull out a board game and everybody plays. Flip the script temporarily. They need to know that your partners, that your ego, your well-being does not depend on them validating the hard work you do. Yes, very hard to make a pie, go through all that and have your kids. I mean, that would hurt my feelings. In some cases, I might actually say those words, but not if this is like an ongoing condition, because then that just fuels the guilt martyr thing and we don't want that. But what we're looking for is some authenticity here. If they are not interested yet in your things, ask yourself as a reflective question, how interested have I been in their things? How much have I signaled to them that I am also equally willing to be curious about the stuff that's going on in their lives? And then I might even ask them something like, I have this thing I really want to do. Is there anybody who would humor me and do it with me and just see how it goes? Because I'm excited about it and I need a partner. Like that. Sort of going belly up about your need. Okay. With superpowers, do you take one from each category, like surprise, collaboration, and mind, and work within those? You can do it anyway. There's no right way. What I want you to do, read through all of them and then pick and choose. You might find yourself noticing that you have a child who is really squirrely and fidgety. And so you just skip right ahead to the body section and you think, how can I involve his body more in what he's learning? You might have another child who you keep striving for this independence and they won't be independent. And then you read collaboration. You're like, actually, that's what this child needs. I'm going to try these strategies for a month and see how that goes. That's how I want you to use it. It's like a menu of resources or items you can try to cause the learning. But let me tell you this right now. This is not about throwing big parties or putting in a lot of front effort. I'm not asking you to stage an entire Broadway level play to get a child interested in fractions. That's why I said with surprise, sometimes the surprise is you're patient, you're not mad, and you're sitting with the child and you're working through it one problem at a time. That might be the most surprising thing some of you can do for your kids right now. See what I mean? It's not about turning your home into Disneyland. It's about tapping into the way these superpowers reorient the relationship around learning. There you go. I sat down and binge watched Carmen Sandiego with my kids, their invitation. Wow. The learning that happened, and we stayed in PJs and watched until 3 p.m. Wendy, you already know how to do this. You're doing a fantastic job. Another thing that you might want to think about, like with the pie thing, let's say you have kids who show very little interest. It is certainly possible to simply print that page of options, tape it to the sliding glass door, and at the top, just write, this is on the menu today. If anyone wants to do it, come find me. I'll be sipping tea and reading a book in the other room. See what happens. Maybe you write it on a piece of paper, turn it into a paper airplane, and fly it into the room of the video watchers for them to open. And they open it up and it says, I'll be in the kitchen from 3 to 4. Anyone who wants to bake a pie, I'm there. And you just wordlessly let them have the opportunity to reflect, consider, and to decide to join you. We're very wordy, we're very upfront, we're very teachy, we're very, hey, this is what we're doing, it's going to be so much fun. And then everybody's like, oh gosh, I have to prove to her that it's fun. I don't want that pressure, right? You know, it's sort of like, don't you have like that one relative who, when they give you a gift, you dread it because you know you have to almost do a performance to prove how grateful you are. So you just rather they not give you the gift. Or maybe some of you have spouses. This used to be my husband. I'm about to throw him under the bus a little bit. You know, he'd wash the dishes. I'd be watching TV or something. And they'd be like, look how clean the kitchen is. I'm like, you need me to throw a parade? I mean, when I wash the dishes, nobody comes in and says, wow, what a clean kitchen. Do you know what I'm saying? So I kind of at some point got to the point where I was like, dude, don't do the dishes. It's more work to thank you than for me to just clean them. Get what I mean? Okay, you know what I mean. I see you know what I mean. Okay, here's another one. Could you provide any approaches, resources, or tips for a tween who believes they are behind their peers? Oh, I feel that. And that they have gaps in their learning, but they don't want to do the work to catch up. They just want to wake up knowing everything. Oh, of course they do. It's too overwhelming for their perfectionistic nature. Note, this mama is fine where they are. I only ask that they continue to improve upon themselves. Okay, let's talk about that. So in my experience, perfectionist children get it genetically. Hear where I'm going? Usually there is some version of perfectionism in the family. A parent who is critical, a parent who's hard on themselves, a home that is really carefully cared for at all moments in time, a space where what gets valued the most often is stuff that's done really, really well, and there isn't as much space for risk or adventure. Lots and lots and lots of parents are perfectionists and they don't even know it. They say things like, oh, I'm totally fine if he makes a mistake. But what they're really saying is, live up to my standards, and if you make one mistake, I'll tolerate it. But here the child is telling you, here's my big mistake, I don't want to do it. And the parent doesn't like that. See what I mean? Did you catch what I'm saying? The child presents this way, And then we say, no, 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 don't be that way. Be this way with some mistakes and I'll be okay. But what you're doing is you're defining how that child should be. It's your own version of what you think that child should be. And you're willing to allow a couple of mistakes even. Do you see? Can you feel that maybe just a little bit? So when I think of a tween who is really aware that he's behind, and imagine you've gotten all the way to junior high. You are so sick of the routine of your family. The four walls are closing in. You're like, done this, been there. I know the table. I know the ding pencil. I know the food I'm going to have for lunch. Like, that's how you're feeling when you are 12 or 11. And now your mom says, well, just work a little harder. We'll get there, but you've got to catch up. And I will help you catch up, and I don't want you to suffer, so we're going to catch up. Like, that's just, it's just, ugh. So guess where you start with that? Just, ugh. It sounds like exhaustion to catch up. I don't even want to talk about catching up, honey. Catching up, so not on my agenda. You know what my agenda is? Happiness. So you feel behind. I may be responsible for that on some level. Are you kind of thinking maybe I'm responsible for that on some level? I mean, if you aren't, I can imagine you will be, because like, I did your whole education and that's like weird and awful and I feel terrible about it and you feel terrible. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to slide into summer. What are the things you feel the most behind in right now? What's bugging you the most? Oh, I'm really bad at fill in the blank, reading, writing. Okay, we're gonna let everything else slide and we're gonna take a week off. And during this week, I want us to both kind of brainstorm what your ideal life would look like if you were good at that thing. What would you do with that thing? Like, if you were good at reading, what would you do with reading? How would reading change your life? How would being better at reading be good for you? How would being better at writing be good for you? What would you do with it? We're so hung up on comparing to peers and catching up to grade level and getting into college. And our kids don't want to put in that work, partly because they've already not been successful. They've already failed. They're already behind. And then we're saying, okay, well, like, catch up to your peers and get ready for college. And they don't even know why they're doing it. They don't even know why they're writing or what reading would do for them. So maybe just start there. Admit, share the burden, take some time to reflect on why this subject would have any meaning or relevance for your child's life and for them to see the meaning and relevance, and then chip away at it. Very small. We will get there. But in the section where I'm talking about, you know, sustaining the magic, I give you a whole bunch of strategies that you can use. Reasonable expectations, how to set up lessons using like the interval, planning from behind, seasonal schooling. I was like trying to find it quickly and I didn't. And my kid is home, so I'm also feeling that. Do you hear where I'm going with this? Start to work with where they actually are, not where you want them to be. Be patient. Stephanie says it every day. There are no educational emergencies. And allow them to know that that limited feeling that this thing in front of me is bigger than me and I cannot scale that wall, that you actually get it. You get it on the inside. Your whole body registers it. And then you start chipping away, teeny tiny, one thing at a time, finding them the resources that help them be successful. And maybe you even wait till you have the fall energy to draw on again. Like for now, kind of coasting into the summer, let him know you've got his back. You won't let him fail. You're on his team. You will find a way together. That kind of language. See what I mean? Thank you, Jeannie, for finding that. Thank you. Yes, it's good to celebrate. We will get there. Remember, you didn't start reading until you were 10, but then you were reading novels? Exactly. You know, and you may also, the one thing I've noticed about this with parents is that a lot of times when their kids are failing, they go into cheerleader mode. They start doing, give me an A, give me an L, give me an E, give me an X. Alex, you're amazing. And Alex is over there and he feels like S-H-I-T. Cheerleading doesn't pull them out of it. Do you know what does? Climbing down into the mud and feeling it with them. That's what helps them. So yes, sometimes reminding them of those things can be beneficial once they know that you get the full scale of it. But if you don't get the full scale of it, they go into proving to you how bad they feel, how real this is, how much your cheerleading cannot fix it. Make sense? Yeah, there you go. Now, you're gonna help them climb out of the mud. I'm not saying you wanna stay in the mud, but you gotta still get the full scale, or they will keep escalating it to prove to you that this is true, because they want you to get it. And often what happens is it gets this big stalemate going. The kid is working harder and harder to prove to you how far behind they feel, and so they act more and more behind, right? And they act more and more resistant. And you're over here, you know, trying to pull them in. So just like let go of the rope, I say drop the rope, get on their side. Just sit there for a little while. Be patient. Give yourself a month of sitting with it. Brené Brown is the bomb. Dare to Lead, that book, is life-changing. It's about business, but you will find much help in that book. She's amazing. Yep. Okay. The one thing I promised that we didn't get to, and this is a lot longer than I expected it to be, but here's one of the things that I wanted to address was video games, because we get this question every single time, and we talked about it extensively last time. My son Liam, the gamer, is home. He's 24. He is living at home temporarily while he is figuring out the career he wants, so we're excited about that. So I have been asking him questions about online gaming. And he sent me a very interesting article that I've only partially read, so I'm going to finish reading it and then decide if it would be a good thing to post or not. But one of the things that he explained to me that has changed since he was a child using the internet, and now you guys all have kids using the internet, I don't, my kids are all adults. But one thing that's changed since he was a kid is that YouTube is now been invaded by bots. You guys might know all this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Spam bots, companies that take advantage of the algorithms based on key terms to infiltrate the YouTube channels that are for children, so kids under 12 or whatever. And this article kind of goes into a lot of detail. It's actually a very long article, so I don't even know if it's worth reading. But the bottom line is, what he and I were talking about is, when I talk about video gaming and the internet, I am hoping that you are still monitoring it the same way you might monitor their Netflix shows or what they might choose to read in the library. In other words, you're present and involved. It doesn't mean they shouldn't be on YouTube channels, but maybe you build the playlist of what they watch so that a kid who's 7 or 8 isn't just clicking through YouTube. That was a tip from him that I thought was really valuable. And so that I wanted to share with you, because I forget, you know, that I didn't have the scale of what's gone on online that you're all facing on a daily way. And I really appreciated that. He and I are collaborating right now. There will be more coming. He has so much good to say. Like for example, he just taught his girlfriend how to play this one online game, and they are in some kind of a mode that has very limited number of people involved, which keeps it sane and safe and fun, and they're adults. So I am going to develop more resources for you that will help you have an online life that values the fabulous properties of gaming and online exploration, all the good of the internet, while we're paying careful attention to what isn't good about the internet. And we know there's a lot. And I don't want you to think that I'm the kind of person who's a unfettered access girl. You know, I get that accusation occasionally. Oh, Julie just says let them play any video game they want. It's not really me. It's not really how I think about it. I am about partnering with your children, but that requires intentionality, and it requires being present, being a collaborator, not just using the television or, you know, the internet to pacify a child, right? When I see these, you know, parents at restaurants and every kid has an iPad, it breaks my heart a little. Like, we're at a restaurant, you're with your children, this is a chance for big juicy conversation, right? Let's not always pacify our children. Sometimes it's nice to be in a car and play a car game. I understand the need for video too. I'm not saying never use it, but I feel like I'm constantly battling twin problems. One is sort of liberating parents from regulating to the point where their kids don't get to have that joy and adventure that comes from gaming and online experiences, against this need to be offline and have a connection and learn and explore the world, right? Autonomy within boundaries, that's a nice way to put it. Experiencing things together, constant dialogue. You guys, you're killing it. You're exactly right. And I remember when Noah was little, we uploaded the game from a disc, right? He wasn't on the internet. He was playing Roller Coaster Tycoon against the game on his computer. So much of that has moved online. And so then that creates this, you know, nefarious anxiety. So whenever you can set up your own LAN party, or you have a way of the game being curated within your space, or with a limit of how many people have access to it, well, then that's, to me, like the best of all possible worlds. Awesome. Very good. Yes, and we do know that for kids under 3, there is a certain brain development that we want to happen that is not always benefited by overuse of screens. So that's true too. All right. So anyway, let's see. Was there any more questions that I missed? Any advice on helping your kids learn how to partner? He always wants to learn on his own but needs help, so gets frustrated. He feels like he needs to learn it on his own perfectly every time. So this is where you turn the camera inward and you ask yourself, where did that come from? How did he come to this belief that things need to be learned perfectly on your own by yourself? Maybe he needs to see you do a little more failing and asking for his help. Oh, shoot, can't seem to get this egg to crack without shells going everywhere. Could you try that for me? Could you show me how you might do it? Reverse it. Invite him to partner with you. What do you do in the spring with all the things you feel like need to happen every day, like math, reading? I think that you could change when you do them. Maybe in the evening, maybe out on the back deck during daylight savings time, you know, where we have more light. Shorten the amount. Use the interval training model. So there are some days you don't do them at all, but 3 other days where you do, like that. Okay, I'm going to go. I have kept you on for an hour and a half. I think that is the length. I keep trying to make it shorter. It never happens. Has this been helpful? Was this a deepening of what you understand in the book? Yes. Good. Wonderful. Yay, yay, yay. I'm just looking at comments because I never get to. Thank you for being here. If you are new to the Alliance, we hope you'll stay. We would love, love, love to support you in your homeschool. So thank you for joining. And I will see you in the community coaching conversations. And we will continue to process and learn together. Bye, everybody.